Well, I can't tell if we're live or not. I don't hear any theme music, but I'm just going to start talking just in case. Pam, are you there? Well, if not, I'm going to assume we're still going live on the air. And welcome to Skid Row Chatter. My guest tonight is world famous Jill R. Lansdale. Welcome, Jill. Can you hear me okay? Hello. Unbelievable. Apparently, we're having some technical difficulties here in the studio. I'm waiting for a call back from my host or Joe. Well, I just sat on the air with Joe for about 10 minutes waiting for the show to start, and I seem to have been drowned. I'm going to cut out. Call back in and see if we can get it fired up.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I lost you.
I know. I can't tell if we're on the air or not.
I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Well, this is just frustrating. Well, at any rate, let's begin and hope that the technical difficulties iron themselves out.
Okay.
Are you still with me?
I am still with you.
Excellent. Well, there's the theme music. That was a bit of a bumpy start to our highest profile show yet. But tonight on Skid Row Chatter, we have world famous Jill R. Lansdale. And he's here to talk about some of his latest endeavors. And we'll have a little call-in moment towards the end of the show. But first, let's introduce Joe. Joe?
Hello. Hello. Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Your bio is too lengthy and too heavy to lift for me to name all the books you've written, all the stuff you've put out there. So
I don't remember.
Well, we'll focus on what you're here today for. Tomorrow, big day. The Happy Leonard series starts on the Sundance Channel. What is your take on approaching the premiere?
Well, I'm very excited about it. You know, I've been a very fortunate author in that everything of mine that's been filmed, I've liked, and that's not usually the case. And, you know, I'm sure that the next thing that's filmed of mine, it'll be a disaster because I have been so happy. But I've seen all of the episodes of this season. I think they're all really good. They are based on my novel, Savage Season. They follow it really close. They do make some changes. And there are some additions to set up the next season, if there is one, and I think there will be after what I've seen. And that would be for my next novel, Mucho Mojo, and there's a little bit from my third novel, Two Bear Mambo, but it's basically that first one, Savage Season. And I think everyone involved just did a spectacular job.
Excellent. Excellent. You kind of stole my thunder with my next question, because, you know, There's been a series that I thought of after seeing this. There's one, Justified, where they took Elmore Leonard's initial story and kind of built on it. And then there's the Bosch series, the Connellys, where they actually seem to weave in a few novels simultaneously. And I was wondering where they took the route from and how far it went.
Well, you know, they, like I said, they based it on Savage Season, but they did manage to move push a little bit of Mucho Mojo into it and Two Bear Mambo for setups for future situations. And they brought some characters that you find out about in Mucho Mojo into the forefront and let us know a little bit more about them in passing. So, so far, like I said, so good. I'm really, really pleased. I got to, you know, I was a co-executive producer on it. I got to be involved a lot. And when I see the show, I feel like it's the flavor of my work.
Is being a part of the process everything you sort of hoped it would be? This being, you know, I think this is, you know, the deepest you've been involved, right? Being a producer and having a whole series done.
Well, I was a producer on Cold in July and on another small film, but this is the first one where I've had a little more impact on it because Lowell Northrop optioned the Savage Seasons a few years back, and he wanted to make a film out of it. That didn't happen, so he went out and marketed it as a TV show, and then Jim Mickle, who directed Cold in July, and Nick DiMicci, who wrote the script, were interested in also making a TV series of the Happ and Leonard book. So it was kind of a thing where we brought everybody together, and then they went in and pitched it, and it was established, and we got it going with a few bumps here and there, but it's actually been an extraordinarily good experience, and I think that Sundance has made that experience a hell of a lot better than you would expect from hearing all the horror stories. But what a lot of people forget or don't know is that I've actually been involved in film since the late 80s. It's just that nothing started getting made until Bubba Hotep, and then beyond that, Incident on Off of Mountain Road, Cold in July, this. But I've actually been selling screenplays and been involved in film on the sort of a peripheral level for, like I said, a very, very long time. So it's not new to me, but having stuff start to come out sort of back-to-back, that is new.
You know, Cold in July, absolutely. One of my favorite of your books for a reason that I'll discuss a little later, but the movie was great. And I had heard somewhere that got optioned in, like, the late 80s. Is that when that was initially optioned? Is that true?
Yes, it was actually about 1990. I wrote the original screenplay. It was optioned by John Irvin, who did Dogs of War and Hamburger Hill and many other films. I wrote a screenplay, and he tried to get it going, and we tried to get it going, and it went for 7 years without anything happening. And then it laid fallow for years. I think I'm getting close.
You want me to the show on your phone?
They can hear me. They can't hear me.
Yes.
Are you getting feedback?
I'm getting lots of feedback. I really can't hear anything anymore.
Okay.
They just are.
Sounds like the only show coming back to me. Well, I don't have it playing back on my computer, and if you don't either, I guess we're clear. But you were telling us about the impetus of Cold in July.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wrote a screenplay for it, and for like 7 years, we tried to get it out there and get it made, me and John Irvin, and it didn't happen, and then it lay fallow, and then some years later, it was picked up by Jim Mickle and Nick DiMicci. I like those guys, and they did their own screenplay, which was fine by me, because by the time my screenplay got messed with by producers and et cetera, it wasn't even the screenplay I wrote. At least I didn't feel like it was. And these guys then took another 7 years to make it into a film.
So when the downtime happens between having it optioned and having it realized, do you sort of lose hope, or you just push it out of your mind like you're supposed to?
I don't lose hope. I never let it become that valuable to me. I mean, I'm optioned, I get paid, I pass the check. Is if we get closer to it getting made, and then of course I can get a little bit more excited and a little bit more involved, but there's no use getting upset about it because I'm also writing other books. I've got other film options. So I've always got something in the hopper, so to speak. So I don't ever have a time when I just, have invested myself totally in any one project that has to do with film. With novels, it's a little different. I can do that. No one's going to, interrupt me or try to tell me we can't do it because it costs too much money or it needs a director of this particular caliber or whatever. So it's different when you're writing, and it's different when you got a lot of projects, and even if you got a lot of film projects, because you don't pass in on just one thing.
Was it emotionally difficult for you to surrender the initial screenplay for Cold in July? When they brought somebody else in?
No, it wasn't. No, the experience of the other one, the first draft or two I did, I really liked. I think it was, to be frank, I think it was closer to the book than the one that got filmed. But
right.
As time went on, it got changed, and the producers got in. That's why I just said at some point, look, I'm done with this, because it's become something I didn't want, something I didn't write. And it was something I wrote, but I changed it so much, and I felt like that they were changing it, so I just didn't want to have any more involvement with it. And by that point, I just didn't even want to do a screenplay, and I was happy for someone else to do it. And I think they did a good job. That's the important part.
Well, your sort of coming to film, the film success kind of came through the back door. I mean, was Bubba Hotep the watershed? Is that when things started rolling as far as that goes? Because that was kind of a praise for, you know, almost cult status immediately.
Well, you know, it was the first time anything of mine had actually been filmed. You know, later, like I said, there were other things. But before that, I was optioning films to all kinds of people, you know. I mean, I currently have written screenplays for Ridley Scott and like I said, John Irvin, and a number of other directors and producers and different people that never got off the ground, but I got paid for. So, you know, there's people I know that have spent their entire careers writing screenplays that were never filmed, and they've made, you know, an entire living off of it, and a good living. So to me, it was always a supplemental living, but I always did everything with the intent that it would be filmed, that it would be made, but with the complete understanding that the odds were against it. So I never really, you know, sit around and moped or, you know, weeped about it or anything else. It's just, that was just part of the job. And I was using that to also finance writing more. And so I was doing better with novels than I was with film, but I've been optioning. I don't even know how many books I've optioned. I've probably got like 30 books and stories that have been optioned over the years. And some of them for 7 years at a time, 9 years at a time. One, though it was not straight, was optioned 11 times, and over the years, not back to back. And then finally it was bought outright, never filmed. So, you know, you're dealing with a whole different thing there. I'm also in a little better position now to be able to control my works a little bit better. But I don't regret, I sold out the film rights to The Big Blow to Ridley Scott, but I have the book rights, so it doesn't change the book. And the same way with Dead in the West, that doesn't change the book. But both of those gave me enough money that it really helped establish what I needed to get myself comfortable, to pay off my home and things like that. So I don't have any regrets. And we were raising two kids back then, too. And so, like I say, I don't sit around weeping about this or that. I mean, life's been very, very good to me. And my career has been pretty extraordinary, all things considered.
Well, you know, it's just that having the film made seems to be such a holy grail for so many writers, and it's kind of unfortunate that nowadays that it's because that's what really seems to make the leap towards being a household name.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. In fact, I've always, you know, it's unfortunate that it takes film and television to validate someone. But this other side of that, and the truth of the matter is, there are so many books out there that even a good writer, and I've been very successful. I haven't actually been scraping the barrel at all. I've been doing really well for, you know, a long time. But I'm doing better now because more people in one show can be aware of Happen Leonard than all of the advertisement. And that's the problem. There's not that much advertisement. If a book isn't already, or a writer, author isn't already selling big, they don't normally do a lot. I have a very, very good publisher, Mahalan, who has been extraordinary. But there is no, you know, question that the arrival of this series, the arrival of Cold in July, pretty much back to back, has boosted people's awareness, because there are a lot more people who watch movies and television than read books. And there are a lot of people who love books and also watch television and movies. That's me. I love all of it, and I spend time on all of it. But sometimes it's just that little boob tube can reach so many people at one time and make them aware of an author that it can change their lives, you know. And I've seen it happen for many. My friend George Martin, you know, had been around a long time, been writing novels and good novels, and had done some TV. But when he did Game of Thrones, you know, it came out in book form, of course, and it was doing pretty good, and then it was doing real good, and then the series came along, and then it was doing magnificent, because the series is just like an advertising program for the novels.
Well, yeah, that's a double-edged sword for him, too. Now he's got the world banging on his door saying, hurry up with the next one.
Right, right. Well, you know, George is a great guy. He's a great author. And, you know, I think people just, you know, they want that story. They need to be patient and let him do it. It takes time to put all those things together. Those books are extremely complex, and he'll get there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good things come for those who wait. But you don't feel like, you don't feel as though you've been frustrated. You know, a guy that's written over 40 books to finally have heads turning when series deal in this case. I mean, for me, in my perception, the Cold in July was the one that really kind of tipped the scales for you. But that doesn't, you know, bitterness would not be a way to state it.
No, I just happen to be bitter. I have nothing to be bitter about. I find that attitude just silly. I mean, especially in my life, my life's been good to me. I've sold a lot of novels over the years, and I'm sort of like Ray Bradbury. I don't think he ever had a bestseller. I'm not comparing myself to you know, his skill. I'm just talking about as kind of an experience. Is that I've never had a bestseller, but my books just keep selling, and they keep coming back into print, and there's new editions. And in Italy, I do extraordinary well over there. I have had bestsellers. And so, you know, my career has been really good to me, and I've had lots of film money. I've written lots of comic books. I've had comic book adaptations and, you know, nonfiction and things. So I'm very happy. And I was a guy who grew up in East Texas, a poor guy who kind of, you know, worked his way up and started writing and tried to make a living at it, and worked jobs as, you know, worked in the rose fields. I worked in potato fields. I was a bouncer. I was a janitor. I did all of that stuff. So for me, it looks like the best of all worlds to me, because I have a nice home. I was able to, you know, we were able to pay for what the kids needed when they were growing up. My wife was able to quit work and go to work for me, and which has been very helpful. So I feel like I'm living the dream. I never compare, you know, what other people are doing to what I'm doing. The only thing that's important is I get up every morning. I'm excited about my work. I love to write. Everything else is just gravy, you know. And if of the films, all of them have done well by me, but nothing has boosted my work like the TV series, and it hasn't even come out yet.
Well, yeah, and it looks spectacular.